I'll just give a few introductory remarks. This is Mother's Day, of course, and as I fumble for my speech, which the first two pages I seem to have lost, I'm just going to wing it. That's what I do best anyway. Mother's Day is met with mixed emotions amongst many of us, especially among Unitarians. We don't really mind celebrating motherhood in particular, in general, or our own mothers in particular. Well, at least most mothers. But in any case, what we seem to object to is the commercial appropriation of this day. Let's give you a few facts and figures. There's, in the United States alone, Mother's Day cards are the third largest day in their calendar. They sell something like 7 billion cards. The profits are $7.5 billion. Now, there's something about obscene profit linked to something as sacred as motherhood that we all object to. So I think we have to think to ourselves, not so much in terms of the appropriation of this holiday by the Carlton Card Corporation and the floral industry, God bless them, but more in terms of the original spirit and intent behind Mother's Day. Now, think about the song that we were just all singing together, Bread and Roses. Now, where does this come from? Well, this song arose out of a very long and bitter strike in Lawrence, Massachusetts in 1912. It was a textile strike. And what happened was they passed a law that said, we're going to reduce the work week. You only have to labor for 54 hours a day in these inhuman conditions. When you had to previously labor for 56. And so the company said, great, we're going to pay them $2 an hour less. And the largely women, largely immigrant workers in Lawrence said, that's just not fair. Now you have to remember, this is in 1912. These are unorganized workers, mostly women. They speak 20 different languages, literally. They hold meetings and they defy the expectation of the American Federation of Labor that said it couldn't be done. They organized and they won. One of the absolutely iconic images out of this strike is women armed only with placards, cardboard, bearing this slogan, bread, yes, but roses too. They are facing National Guardsmen who have rifles with fixed, unsheathed bayonets on them, rings of them, hundreds of them. All they've got is a slogan, but they won. The power of that simple phrase should inform all our thoughts on Mother's Day. Because what are the roses symbolic of? Well, they're symbolic of not just fair wages, but fair dealing and dignity. Now, the question we ask ourselves today, of course, is how did we get from bread and roses in our observance of Mother's Day to cards and flowers? Well, it's been a long journey, and we could go back a very long way. We could go back, in fact, to the Neolithic age when we were all first huddling around. And I say that only slightly facetiously because, you know, every day was Mother's Day back then. Because we were all children of the Mother Goddess, we saw the interconnectedness of life. All of life was part of motherhood. And so I would argue, in fact, that the interconnected web of life started back then, and there must have been proto-Unitarians around those hearths and fires. Now, I'm mindful of the clock here, so I'm going to skip this wonderful quote I had from Joseph Campbell, which would link the mythological age with our modern age, but with our personal age. Because in part, he says, listen, mythology works in a society when it's based on the understanding and belief of the harmony of the universe. And the first experience of harmony in the universe we all have is the link between mother and child. And so what makes it universal is when we take that link and we go out into the world and we try to impose some kind of order and unity and harmony. Now, that's a great and laudable thing. But the very first Mother's Day of the modern era that we celebrated arose not out of harmony or unity. It arose out of the chaos of the Civil War, the United States Civil War. Now, in 1870, the memory of that war, with its hundreds of thousands of dead, was still fresh in the minds of many Americans and many others around the world. But it was the same year the Franco-Prussian War broke out. And in that year, the world hung on the edge of an abyss that it would eventually slide into in 1914 with the Great War. And even as we can find the interconnected web of life in that mythic era of the Mother Goddess, so too we find another great UU principle at work in the heart of a woman who was living in New York City at that time. Julia Ward Howe was mindful of the respect for the worth and dignity of every individual, and she used it as one of the cornerstones of her campaign for peace. Now, this is hardly surprising, because she was, in fact, a Unitarian. It is surprising in another sense. Now, it has to be admitted there's a bit of a contradiction here. Julia Ward was born in 1819 to a prosperous Calvinist New York family, but at the age of 21, she married Samuel Gridley Howe, a Boston physician, and he was a Unitarian. They had six kids, four of them made it to adulthood. The Wards were part of the Boston Unitarian Transcendentalist Circle in pre-Civil War times. They were part of the circle that coalesced around Ralph Waldo Emerson, and they were very influenced by their minister, Reverend Theodore Parker. Parker was an ardent abolitionist, and the Wards were ardent abolitionists. Being ardent abolitionists did not mean being pacifists in that age. You just ask John Brown. Now, when the Civil War broke out, quite naturally, the House took side with the Union cause. Julia joined the Red Cross, or not the Red Cross, the Sanitary Commission. It's kind of a precursor to the Red Cross. And she worked treating wounded soldiers. And it was in an encampment near Washington in 1862, seeing Union soldiers preparing to go into battle, that Howe wrote the words for the Battle Hymn of the Republic. Now, it reflects her fierce sentiments, and of course, you may be familiar with the terrible swift sword imagery and the fateful lightning and the hand of God being behind this carnage and this chaos. So it's very strange, but one of the most brilliant pacifists of our age started out writing one of the most stirring war songs ever written by an American. So we do have a contradiction, but it didn't take long for Julia Ward Howe to realize, in treating and seeing the chaos that went on and on and on, that this really wasn't an answer. So when the war comes along, the Franco-Prussian War, she decides enough is enough, and she seizes this moment, and she wants to have an international peace movement, and she writes this proclamation, and she wants to read it at peace conferences, and there's going to be peace conferences in London and Paris, and they won't let her attend because she's a woman. She is undaunted because she's a Unitarian. She's not going to let that stand in her way. She has her own hall in Boston, and on June 2nd, 1870, the author of the Battle Hymn of the Republic replaced it with what I think is a far more noble sentiment. It's called the Mother's Day Proclamation, and it begins like this. Arise then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts, whether our baptism be that of water or of fears.
We will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands shall not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience.
We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice.
Blood does not wipe our dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead.
Let them solemnly take counsel with each other as to that means whereby the great human family can live in peace, each bearing after their own time and sacred impress, not of Caesar but of God.
In the name of womanhood and of humanity, I earnestly ask that a general congress of women without limit of nationality be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient for all at the earliest possible time, with its objects to promote the alliance of the different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international difficulties and questions, the great and general interests of peace.
A little bit different from the Battle Hymn of the Republic, isn't it? This proclamation caught the public's imagination, at least in the United States. Ward Howe was an absolutely vigorous campaigner. In the years following this proclamation, by 1873, women in 18 cities in America were holding women's Mother's Days for peace gatherings, often in conjunction with the other important passion that now took over Howe's life, which was women's suffrage, getting the vote. Women did not, of course, have the vote in those days. In Boston, it continued vigorously for 10 years. In some communities, it lasted for as long as 30 years. And Julia Ward Howe financed almost all those celebrations herself. Unfortunately, it soon lost its momentum. It was replaced by other concerns, and by the time that Howe died in 1910 at the age of 91 at her home in Portsmouth, Rhode Island, it was running out of gas. And by the time the textile workers in Lawrence strike in 1912, it's soon to be replaced with a totally different version of Mother's Day. In fact, the version of Mother's Day that is celebrated more widely now, today, and struggles every year not to be appropriated by those card companies and those flower industries. And strangely enough, it too has its roots in the U.S. Civil War. Now, it starts, this part of the story starts almost exactly the same time as Julia Ward Howe. But it's not in New York, and it's not upper class. It's the poor, working poor, and poverty-stricken state of Virginia, West Virginia, in the mountains, beyond the plantations, away from the slaveholding part of the state. And it starts with a woman named Anna Reeves. And it also involves her daughter, Anna Jarvis. Now, Anna Reeves was born about the same time as Ward. She was a couple of years older. And she married the son of a Baptist minister, a man named Granville Jarvis, in 1850. Granville was a businessman. And he moved from small town to small town seeking his fortune. And as she traveled with her husband, Anna Reeves Jarvis was always amazed at the levels of poverty and the lack of sanitation, the lack of health care in all the small communities she lived in. And she decided to do something about it. And she had a personal stake in this because she and her husband had 11 children together. Only 4 of them reached adulthood. The youngest died at 3 months. All of childhood diseases, which today are easily curable. So what she did was she decided to hold Mother's Day clubs all throughout West Virginia. And they would do things like they would inspect food, like fresh milk. They would organize work relief for women who came down with tuberculosis. They did all sorts of that good social work, and they helped each other. And it was all done as Mother's Day, because the idea was, even if you were from a different faith tradition, or you supported slavery, or you supported the Union, motherhood cuts across all those lines, right? We all have mothers. Now, the Civil War came along, and of course, it changed Anna's life just as much as it changed Howe's life. But she had a different kind of a problem, because her part of Virginia actually broke away from Virginia during the war and became West Virginia, a Union state that supported freedom as opposed to slavery. Now, when the war was over, this posed a huge problem, because you had men who had fought on both sides coming back to the same community, and they had to live together somehow. So what did Anna Reeves Jarvis do? The same thing she'd been doing for years. She proclaimed a Mother's Day for Peace. Instead of a big, huge festival, it was a small local festival, and it was held in a town called Pruntytown. It's the county seat of where she was living. And she dressed in Civil War in Confederate gray. She had another woman dress in Union blue, and they had two of their teenage daughters dressed in white. And they all sang the songs from both sides of the war. They had their daughters ask for the woman in blue and the woman in gray to embrace. And that's what they did. They sang Auld Lang Syne and asked people to shake hands. That's the foundation of Mother's Day. That's what we should not forget. It's not about cards, not about flowers. It's about reconciliation and the acknowledgement that there is something greater. It's also about these two women. They're extraordinary women. They have the same kind of principles. They have the same goals. And they go about it different ways. Julia Howe has this great, huge vision, and she goes about it. Whereas Anna Reeves Jarvis has a smaller, localized vision and goes about it. Now, Anna's daughter, also Anna Jarvis, decided that she would honor the memory of her mother after she died in 1905 by demanding a holiday for mothers. And after 7 years of ceaseless lobbying, every businessman, every congressman, every church leader, anybody who mattered, Congress listened to her. And in 1914, U.S. President Woodrow Wilson signed this thing into law. This is the version of Mother's Day that we have all been celebrating for the last about 100 years. It's also the version that fights every single year against the appropriation of commercial interests to find its true heart, its touchstone, so to speak. And we owe a great deal to these two women. They're extraordinary women. And they remind me about the Unitarian principle of the respect for the individual quest for truth. These two individuals were seeking, in some ways, the same thing. They went about it by different paths and had different results, but I think we're all enriched as a result. The idea that you can do something larger than yourself if you all pull together. Now, we had a segment here where we were supposed to have an open mic on motherhood, but I suspect we might have run out of time. Indeed. Well, in that case, I think we need to wrap it up, and we need